Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us this week. On today's podcast, we'll hear from Don Robison, Seed Administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist and Seed Commissioner. We'll also hear from Midwest Hemp Council Administrative Manager Michelle Linus, who'll talk about the upcoming Midwest Hemp Council education and social events. But first, we turn our attention to Indiana Seed Administrator Don Robison. Don, thanks for joining us and hope all is well with you today.
Yeah, I'm doing great, Jason. The weather is finally bright and sunny and not too windy, so we're fantastic.
Yeah, you can't really beat it for the 1st of December, can you?
That's right. We're looking pretty good.
There we go. Well, Don, I know it's been a busy couple of weeks for you, a busy year for you, actually, of course. But here in the last week or so, you sent out a letter to the hemp community designating 2020 as a research year for Indiana. In the letter, you state that this was based on the delay of the USDA rules and the comment period process. Can you give us a little more insight on that? What does this mean for Indiana farmers who want to grow hemp in their fields? And was this delay avoidable or was it expected from the USDA?
From the USDA, I would say it probably was avoidable. We did not get the rules when they were expected. We got here late in October. And then they've got a 60-day period where they're going to talk about them, expect input from all the different states and stakeholders, and we encourage the stakeholders in Indiana, the growers and the processors and handlers and labs, we expect that they would read those rules. I know it's 161 pages. It's not exactly bedtime reading, but we expect that they would read those rules and make comments to the USDA about those rules. As far as what that did to Indiana, we started a licensing software search about a year and a half ago at OISC, and we have chosen the software supplier, but that software supplier, we have to wait until the rules are final, which now won't be until probably March. Not the Indiana rules, but the USDA rules.
Mm-hmm.
They have to wait until those rules are final because they've got a 60-day comment period, and then they've got a period of time where they take those comments, mull them over, and decide what they're going to change. And then they put those into a final rule that they want to move forward with. They don't have an emergency rulemaking authority, so it still will be an interim final rule. But at that point in March, then we could start building the software around the rule, which puts us, that building software, making it match up to the rule, that's not a quick process either.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going to be probably in May before we could open up a commercial year. That's one point. The second point is the USDA rule that came out, and again, I encourage everybody to read it, is much more restrictive than what we expected. That being said, we thought we can move forward with a research year, which truly does not limit people that much. They do have to find a researcher, and they do have to have a research proposal and operate underneath that. But we don't tell them they can't grow the acres that they want to grow on the high side. We will have interim rules that state what the minimums are, but that's just to make sure it's actually hemp and not something nefarious.
And so, Don, before we move on, is that really the only difference that this rule makes, that as far as having it be a regular hemp year versus a research year?
That's the biggest difference, yeah. That's the biggest difference.
Will that hinder farmers at all other than just more paperwork?
It's a little bit more paperwork, although the application process is going to be pretty similar. It's a little bit more paperwork to find a researcher.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a sore spot. We know that. We realize that. But the opposite end of that is if we just move forward and said, we're going to assume what the USDA is going to say. We're going to go ahead and make it a commercial year, and then we're wrong. Then midstream, we've got to change everything.
So if you go ahead and if you do it, the make it a research year, you can open up the applications for December or January, and that would be, I assume, a huge benefit for as opposed to waiting to what, April or May or June.
Yes, yeah, we would be waiting till April or May or June. You know, there will be a couple of states, and I don't know who they'll be, but we're on a monthly regulators conference call with every state.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, and you know, and I said every state, I mean every state is on that call now. We know what the temperature is of these other states. There are a couple that will say we're going to go ahead with commercial application, but when those rules come out finalized from USDA, they will be in conflict with the USDA rules on some key points.
And what would that do to the farmers?
Well, at that point, they may be federally illegal.
And by being illegal, they would not be able to sell their crop. And in Indiana, being a research year, would be able to sell their crops. Is that the difference there?
That's a possibility. Yes, that's a possibility.
Hmm.
So we really feel like being a research year is kind of a protection for the Indiana farmer this year.
Mm-hmm.
We are definitely not trying to hold people back. We understand that this crop has so much interest behind it. We also understand in the survey we've done of growers tells us it's a very risky situation to grow the crop financially. It takes substantially more labor than what people expect when they get into it. It costs more to produce the crop than they expect going into it. So we're not trying to hold anybody back, but we are trying to make sure everybody understands. You know, the phrase I started here is if you're 3 cents from bankruptcy, don't get into hemp.
Well, that's great advice, Don, and you've given us some great information here and really cleared this up. Last year, they were looking at about 100 licenses. This year, in 2020, you're looking at expanding that to 300 licenses. That's quite an expansion there.
Well, and actually, if you look into the numbers, it's even more expansion than that because we're not going to count towards that 300 labs. We're not going to count processors that are not up and running yet. So we're not going to count researchers towards that 300, university researchers. So we're actually looking at 300 up and running labs and farms and processors. So we really feel that will handle most of the demand for the year. We have pulled in a lot of extra resources here at OISC to help us on the technology side to make that work. We've got some people in our office that deserve been doing yeoman's work to get that ready, and we have internally announced kind of a soft announcement. We're going to kick off the application process the week of January 6th.
Okay.
And by saying that, we probably could have done it before the holiday break. But as you know, we are Purdue employees and OISC employees, and Purdue is on a two-week break at the holidays. So we thought the worst possible customer service was to open up hemp application process and then be gone for 2 weeks.
Right, right. Yeah, that probably wouldn't sit real well with the folks. Now, each grower is expected to, as you said, work with a qualified university researcher. Obviously, I assume Purdue University is open for business in that category.
Absolutely, it is. As is, you'd be surprised. We worked with about 10 different universities last year.
Oh, okay.
I use the analogy or the examples of Wabash College and Franklin College. You know what? If you can find a good researcher at Wabash College or Franklin College that has an interest in this, whether it be from economics or business or engineering or manufacturing or any particular area that's to the grower to find a way to do that or up to the handler of the processor to do that. If you can find those guys at Franklin or Wabash or Hanover or Vincennes or Ball State, they're all open. So we will be willing, we have in the past, and we will be willing again to answer questions from those university researchers to make sure they understand what they would be required of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that we would help them understand they're not legally part of the growing process for that grower. They're an advisor, a research advisor to that growing or handling site. So some of them have been concerned that you know they don't want to legally be involved with with that. So we have made sure that they understand they're not legally tied to that grower or that handler. They're a research advisor. So we're willing to answer calls and questions from those university people. You know, another thing, something that the USDA rules demand now is a national criminal fingerprint background check. That is a very big difference than the Indiana background check that we eventually got to be a pretty smooth process last year.
Mm-hmm.
The national criminal fingerprint background check has to be done by the grower, by the individual, has to be done actually required by the USDA rules by all the officers in the company that will have anything to do with the hemp
or
the money.
Mm-hmm.
A CFO has nothing to do with growing hemp, but he has to get a national criminal fingerprint background check. On that email, we put a website and a phone number, which we understand is partially correct, and we're trying to get the right information back out to everybody. It's not wrong. It's just not completely correct.
Now, will the state also require the background checks as well as the federal background check?
No, just the state background check will work. Just the federal background check will work.
Oh, okay.
Because what we found out is the state background check only did criminal activities, drug activities in the state of Indiana.
Okay.
So if somebody had a record in 48 states, but Indiana was not one of those states, we were licensing.
And of course, then this information will be sent out. I'm sure we'll have it on the Midwest Hemp Council website, but that will be information on, you said the information is out there, but some of it might not be correct. So I assume that correct information will be coming out soon.
Yes. The information we pulled was off of an Indiana State Police email that we get back and forth when someone needs to do a fingerprint background check.
Mm-hmm.
We have come to find out that that is not necessarily, although some people are making that work, that's not necessarily the best route to get to the information.
Now, Don, right. You've got some educational meetings coming up, and these are certainly intended to help the farmers, help anybody with the application process, but also could possibly be a requirement for their application?
Yes. We had a meeting with representative stakeholders, and what we did is we came up with the idea that because there are so many growing pains in this crop, not only from a regulatory standpoint, but probably just as important from an agronomic standpoint, from a entomology standpoint, from a botany plant pathology standpoint, farmers and growers need to know what they're up against. This crop does not behave the way corn and beans does.
Mm-hmm.
The risk is substantially higher because your input costs can be, you know, I've heard as high as $20,000 an acre, and I've heard as low as a few thousand dollars per acre.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're looking at a corn crop with massive amounts of fertilizer and chemicals at under $1,000 an acre to put in. And here you're looking at potentially on the high end, 20 times that amount of investment.
Wow.
Plus the additional labor. You're not planting, if you're at that level of input, you're not planting this with a corn planter and going home at night.
Right, right.
You know, your hand doing a lot of stuff, your hand weeding, your hand picking off insects, your hand pruning, your hand harvesting. You're doing a lot of stuff by hand.
I'm trying
to put these meetings together in January and February.
Okay, in January and February. So obviously we'll get information on those coming up soon as well.
Yes.
All right. And again, we're speaking with Don Robison, the seed administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist and Seed Commissioner. Don, just some great information today, and I know we've still got some more to get to here. Right now, we've got the year-end hemp grower survey going on. What is that? What do you use it for? And do you need participants for that?
You know, we are nearing the end of the participation on that. It was anybody that grew hemp in Indiana in 2019, it was actually a requirement by law and by statute and by rule.
Mm-hmm.
That they complete this survey. So it gets into average yield, gets into what percent of the crop was grown for CBD, what percent of the crop was grown for fiber, those type of things. It gets into some financial information as well, which is a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
and nobody likes giving out financial information. So we've tried to ask that in a soft way. You know, we've only got one question that asks a hard number on what your profitability was, and as expected, as could be expected, that question doesn't get answered a lot.
Ah, does that void the survey if they miss a question, or do they just you just get less information?
We get less information now. Okay. Now, in the future, based on what may be in the rules, that may void the survey.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case right now. So, here's an example of some great agronomic information we would have had no way to know. The
right.
Purdue researchers would have had no way to know. The question, what was your primary fertility program in nutrients per acre? So the primary fertility program, the average among all of these surveys, and there were 263 different fertility programs entered. And the average was 86 units of nitrogen, 61 units of phosphorus, 81 units of potassium, and a really surprising 36 units of micronutrients.
Hmm.
That's a lot of micronutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of information that Purdue can look at, that Ball State's soil scientists can look at, Vincennes soil scientists, and they can say, you know, if that's the average, now we ended up at X percent CBD on average. Let's play with that. That's a benchmarking point.
Sure.
As an example, 44% of the people that grew hemp this year used irrigation as drip tape. 14% said they didn't use it or they used overhead irrigation like a center pivot, and then the rest didn't use any irrigation at all.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's a really high number of irrigation numbers compared to a corn and bean guy. Another really interesting point, surveys completed so far. We got a few to go. Surveys completed so far. We had about 2,500 acres of hemp planted outdoors this year and 10,000 acres planned for next year.
Oh, wow.
So, again, really interesting information. Let me look here. About 72% said they had a problem planting the crop this year due to weather. So, you know, those are the type of information that we're getting in this survey. When we send out the information, it's going to be aggregated information, so no one's individual information will get out.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we commit to in writing. In the survey or in the application, we tell them what information we need and that none of that's going to get out aggregately. In fact, I pull their names off of this before it goes to even our own staff.
Mm, I see.
So I'm the only one that sees this person had that yield.
Out of the surveys that have been returned, how many are still on average outstanding? And is that going to penalize those folks from growing in the future?
If they don't fill out the survey, they will not get an application next year. That is in statute that they have to give us that information to continue on in the program. So what we are doing is sending out regular reminders. We also know that some of the hemp cooperatives in the state are sending out reminders to everybody that worked with them. But when we get an application in, say, January 8th, say if that's the day we open it up, we get an application in, one of the first things we will be doing is checking to make sure did they fill out the survey last year if they were a grower the year before. If they did not, they won't get the application approved until they've done that.
Gotcha. And unfortunately, anybody that might have had a bad year with hemp and decided, you know, we're not even looking at this again in the future, no point in filling out that survey, kind of doing a disservice to all the other farmers in the future, because their problems certainly could be documented and help others in the future.
That's right. And you know what we've got, Jason, is pretty interesting. Most people, a high number of people, I think it was like 78%, said this was a very risky crop. Conversely, 85% said they're going to plant the crop next year, too.
Ah, fantastic. Resilient farmers, that's what we love in Indiana.
That's right. Well, and I think it points it points to an overall economic picture of agriculture right now in the Midwest as well. Mm-hmm. Corn and beans aren't making anybody a lot of money, so why don't we, let's take a risk. Let's try something else.
And again, with 1 year under the belt, there's obviously were a lot of issues, a lot of problems. Some were natural causes like the rain. Other things were perhaps man-made things nobody considered. But as we move forward year after year, those things should be consolidated, those problems alleviated, and hopefully things tighten up and people can start profiting from that crop here in Indiana.
Absolutely. Interesting points on fiber versus CBD outside.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are going to focus on CBD as expected, because that's potentially where, and I do say potentially, big capital P, where the bigger dollars are.
Mm-hmm.
More people are going to focus on fiber as well. There is not a processor for fiber.
What would that take for somebody to open up a processing plant in Indiana?
Well, it's not a cheap thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that there are two companies that are moving forward with plans to build processing facilities. I don't know if those would be open to other farms' crop, or whether they're going to have a closed system. So
what do farmers do for a processor? Where do they find a processor?
Well, we just got a story today. Your question leads right into it. We got a story today that somebody has a crop. They've got their fiber crop.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job of redding it. They had a pretty good success story growing the crop and redding it. The processor out of Kentucky went out of business. They found a processor in a coastal area. The freight to get the crop to the coastal area is higher than what they would get paid for the crop. So we definitely need processors to be more local.
Right. Well, if there's a profit to be made, then surely somebody will step forward and make that happen, you would think.
Yes. Yes. We were about 69% CBD this year.
Mm-hmm.
as a state. And then so
would that deter farmers from growing fiber next year? I mean, if there's nobody to process it.
Honestly, I haven't found anything to deter farmers from growing the crop. There's a lot of excitement, and I see the excitement. I can get excited about that, but I want to make sure everybody understands the risk before they get in.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, if you're 3 cents from bankruptcy, this is not your crop.
Right. But are soybeans and corn going to save the farm at this point?
Probably not either. I don't know what will, but there's so much expense here. About 70% of the people said they lost money this year.
Ah, I see.
Broke even or lost. I need to clarify that. Mm-hmm. Broke even or lost.
I think a lot of them expected that, though, as well.
I think so. I think they did. As we go from 100 outdoor licenses to 300 total licenses, we're going to get a myriad of people.
Sure.
You know, some are going to have the money and some are not.
Mm-hmm.
Some are going to go with an acre and some are going to go with 2,500 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So we expect to see a lot of it. We're not going to tell a guy who wants to plant 1,500 acres and he thinks he has a place to sell it. We're not going to tell him no.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to demand, and the law allows us to do that and actually requires us in some ways to do that they have a place to sell it, or they have some form of agreement with a place to sell it.
But, of course, there's nothing to guarantee
that. We're going to ruin the market.
Right, but there's nothing to guarantee that processor is not going to go out of business like the one in Kentucky did.
Absolutely, and that's understandable. We understand things happen. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's kind of like the Wild West again, isn't it, Don?
Yes, it is. It is. And I don't know if a regulator is a sheriff. Is that the way that works? but there's so many good people involved in this industry. There are some really, really top-notch farmers involved.
Right.
There are some brilliant people in getting involved in processing. It's exciting to see what is beginning to happen. We were just talking in the office today that you know, any industry kind of has some periphery people. And the periphery people, the people that are, in this case, I'll just bluntly say it, the let's make marijuana legal people have kind of backed off of this a little bit, which makes everybody's job a little bit easier. That's a fight for another day for another group of people.
Sure. But
because it's, you know, we're getting a lot more people involved, but it's kind of zeroing in a way on a more focused group, which is a really good thing.
Once again, we're speaking with Don Robison, the seed administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist and Seed Commissioner. Don, it's always great to talk to you. I could go on all day, but I know you have a job to do, and that doesn't include talking to me all day. So we'll let you get back to it. But again, we've got some great information today, and I really appreciate you talking with us.
You know, we always enjoy talking to you, Jason, and the Midwest Hemp Council. It's a great way to get information out. We are speaking at 9 different places over the next 2 weeks. Some of those are public events. And we sent an email out today to our listserv. So if people are looking to hear us speak about some of the research survey information, about in maybe a little bit more detail about the USDA rule set, and what we expect to be moving forward, they can get that email from me or send me an email, and I'll send them the email if they missed it. And we'd be happy to, we're trying to make sure everybody is well informed.
Absolutely. And we'll make sure and get that on the Midwest Hemp Council website as well, so people have a link to go to and get in touch. Don, is there anything else we can add today?
It's a risky crop. There can be a lot of profit in it, done well and with some luck. But know the risk before you get involved. Have a good conversation with someone who may be a buyer for your crop. Make sure that person is out there. This is not the crop to grow without any knowledge of where you're going to sell it.
And Don, when are we going to get the results from the survey that we were talking about?
I hope to have those before the holiday break.
Oh, fantastic.
It depends on when we get the last of the surveys in. Right now, the raw data of the survey is a 219-page PowerPoint.
So that'll take a few minutes to go through.
So I've got to pare that down a little bit before we send it out. But
right.
As somebody said, I'll narrow it down and only focus on the top 113 pages.
That's all we ask of you, Don. That's all we ask. Well, then we certainly, I'm looking forward to this. We'll get you back on after the first of the year, after the smoke is cleared, when you get this out, and we'll go through that and hit as many points as we can, because that's going to be some interesting reading right there.
Absolutely. We hope to get it out so people can look at it and see all the different intricacies. We go into the insects that people face, the good and the bad, beneficial and problem insects, the diseases that they have to be prepared for, all those different things that we go into in the survey. There were 68 different areas that were gone into, and there's some great, great, interesting information, so we want to get that out. We also do look forward, hopefully, to talking to you in early January after the application period has gone out. Or is opened up, so that we can maybe get information out to a large group of people that, like your audience is, and help them navigate that.
That's an audience that grows every week, and we certainly do appreciate it. And reason for that, people like you on here, Don, giving the information we need to get.
Well, I appreciate that thought. We're trying every day to make this easy, but still follow the rules.
There we go. Don Robison, the Seed Administrator, Office of the Indiana State Chemist and Seed Commissioner. Don, once again, thanks for joining us, and we will get you back on here soon.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
All right. Take care. All right, as we continue on, we will talk with Administrative Manager for the Midwest Hemp Council, Michelle Linus. Michelle, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. A lot of stuff going on here with the Midwest Hemp Council in December and January. The crops are not in the fields, but certainly a great time for some education, information, all that good stuff that comes along with the Midwest Hemp Council.
Oh, absolutely.
What do we got going on here on the agenda for December?
So for December, it's pretty packed. Purdue has quite a few events going on, and more dates are going to be added, from what I understand, as of Friday. Tomorrow, I'll be in Clay County in Brazil with Don Robson and Marguerite Bolt and Sarah Caffrey, and they're going to do a review and then a 2020 preview talk. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's from 9:30 to noon. So that'll be a good one to come out to if you can make it. And then Monday, I will be back in Clinton County in Frankfort, Indiana. It'll be the same thing, another review and preview. And then they've got a couple other things coming up. I believe on December 17th, there'll be an overview and a survey results. That'll be in Indianapolis. I'm not entirely sure on the location. Mm-hmm. There'll be another preview and review in DuBois County on December 19th. That'll be in Huntingburg, Indiana. And then, like I said, from what I understand, more dates are going to be added. So please follow our website for those Purdue talks. And then outside of that, we've got a lot of conferences coming up, especially with the Midwest Hemp Council. We're branching out. We're going to other states. Mm-hmm. I'll be traveling to Missouri.
Oh, wow.
I believe in January. Yeah, we've got a conference out there. Michigan's got a great expo coming up, the Midwest iHemp Expo. That's January 10th. I'll be in Missouri on the 16th. Back to December. The Indiana Farm Bureau Convention is coming up. We'll be in attendance for that. Farm Journal has a great event called the Hemp College. That's December 16th. That'll be downtown. We'll be in attendance for that one. December 19th is the DuBois County event. Yeah, January 16th, we're going to have there'll be another extension event in Posey County. That's another review and outlook for 2020. So there are so many events coming up. I can't even go through the entire list.
Well, I'm sure we will have a calendar of some sort listed soon.
There will be. Yeah. There's a lot more Farm Journal Hemp Colleges coming up. As I mentioned, the Michigan event, definitely look into that. The iHemp Expo will be at the National Hemp Expo. So there are so many events coming up and so many opportunities to get out and get educated about hemp.
Well, that's amazing how the calendar is just blown up here in December.
It is. And I think a lot of that has to do with the USDA, right? Mm-hmm. So they've removed hemp from Schedule 1, and now they are in the process of determining their regulations.
And of course, that leads us right into the, as you said, the recent USDA comment section. That we've been talking about that for a couple weeks on the Midwest Hemp Council website. People can go there, they can get the information, they can make comments, and time is running out for that.
It is. The deadline is December 30th, and we need your comments, and we need your individual comments. We do have like a form comment that you can copy and paste, but individual is always better. They want to put your heart into it, right? Your experience, what your hopes, your dreams.
Yeah. Are they really going to read a copy and paste from, 50 or 100 or 1,000 different people? They're going to start just glossing over those.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds, we need more. So get out, please go there. You can go to our website. We've got a link on our Take Action page of where you can submit your comments. And then, like I said, there's some form comments if you need some ideas on what to put.
Okay. And then you've also got the Indiana Hemp Advisory Committee coming up.
We do. So it is my understanding that this is the last meeting before session. Mm-hmm. So we really need people to show up. That'll be in West Lafayette. Again, more details will be on our website. Follow our Facebook page. But we need the attendance there. We need your input. We need your voice. You need to show up. If you want to be a part of this industry, we need your presence.
Now's not the time to be quiet.
Yeah, no, it's not. And especially if you want to be a part of this, a lot of people showed up after Indiana passed its regulatory or its initial regulatory and mm-hmm. didn't like what they were seeing. So if you don't like what you're seeing, please come and be a participant.
There we go. What else can we add to the conversation, Michelle?
Be a part of it. Participate. Come to the events. Get educated. If you want to volunteer, we're always happy to have people come help us at these booths. I mean, I can only be in so many locations at a time.
And you guys always look like you're having so much fun.
We do. And we try to make it as collegial as possible. We want people to be happy and to be a part of this and feel engaged. So that's our goal. So, yeah, if you want to participate, reach out, let us know, and we'll see where you fit.
Michelle Linus, the administrative manager for the Midwest Hemp Council. Michelle, if that's it, we'll certainly let you go. I know you've got a busy day, a busy month, a busy 90 days coming up with a lot of travel going on. Be safe, and we certainly hope to hear back from you here soon. Get some reports and find out what's happening out there.
Will do, and hopefully I'll be a little more organized next time.
That's quite all right, and very understandable. Thanks again, Michelle.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for our show this week. The Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.